So we are discussing the prayers offered by a devotee Jiva within the womb of his mother. So in the first prayer, the Jiva said, "My dear Lord, I surrender unto you." In the first two verses, he glorifies the Supreme Lord by establishing his superior position. He says that you are the one who will move about on the earth, indicating Krishna's appearance. And he says that by your own will, you accept many, many forms for protecting the devotees within this world. Like that. And then he says that only by your mercy, I have attained this position within the womb of my mother, which is Anurupa, Anurupa Gati. I deserve to be within the womb of this mother because of my sinful past. And then he says, but when you also appear within the womb of a mother in the form of, two different understandings are given. Either when the Lord appears within the womb of Devaki, just like any other living entity, he also looks like an Avritatma. It also seems like he is taking shelter of Maya, but still one should understand that he is Aste Vishuddham Avikaram Akanda Bodham. He remains pure, he remains unchanging, and his knowledge is indestructible. Another understanding is when the Supreme Lord also appears as Paramatma along with the Jiva, then is he also getting Anurupa Gati? Is he also being punished because of having a sinful past? He says, no. Even though you are in touch with matter, you still remain Vishuddham, pure. Avikaram, you are not transformed by matter, by coming in touch with matter. And Akanda Bodham, your knowledge is never indestructible, is never destructible, even though you may stay within the body of a living entity as a super soul. These are the two different understandings given by Srila Vishnu Thakur and Prabhupada. So in these two verses, he has established the supreme position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then the Jiva continues. Yappanchabhutarachiterahitasharire Channo yatendriya gunartha chidatmakoham tenavikunta mahimanam rishim tamenam vande param prakriti purushayorpamamsam. So he says that channaha, covered, yaha sharire, covered by this body. And what is this body made of? Panchabhuta rachite. Covered by this body, which is made of the Panchabhutas, but still, Chidatmako Rahitaha, even though you are covered by the Panchabhutas, but you always remain Chidatmaka. Chidatmaka means a spiritual particle. Ayata Indriya Guna Artha, even though you may be covered by Ayata, Ayata means not like that. Not like that means the nature of the living entity is Chidatmakah. The nature of senses, gunas, and sense objects is Ayata, not Chid. It's not Sachidananda. That's what it means. Ayata, Guna, Indriya, Artha. Aham Vande Rishim Tam Enam Pumamsam. I offer my respects to that omniscient Krishna, Prakriti Purushayoho Param, who is superior to Prakriti. And Purusha here refers to the Purushavataras. Tena Mahimanam Akuntaha, Avikuntaha. Whose glories do not become weakened by the covering of, by coming in touch with Maya. So one thing is getting contaminated. Another thing is the living entity does not get contaminated, but is potency gets weakened when it is covered by Panchabhuta Rachite Sharire, that Sharira which is made of the five elements. Whereas when the Supreme Lord takes shelter of such a body, he does not take shelter of such a body, he gives shelter to such a body. By remaining there, he gives shelter to that body, as Shukadeva Goswami prays in the fourth chapter of second canto. Bhutair mahatbir yaima puro vibhu nirmaya shete yadamoshu purushah bungte gunan shodasha shodashatmakah solankrishishta bhagavan vachamsi me. In one of the prayers, Shukadeva Goswami says that the Supreme Lord is shodasha shodashatmakah. He is the Atma. He is the life force of inanimate objects also. He gives life to inanimate objects. We may say, what do you mean gives life to inanimate objects? Inanimate objects means they are lifeless. What does it mean to give life to inanimate objects? So he says that inanimate objects, even though they may not have any life, but they have some dharma. Sugar is sweet. Why? Because the Supreme Lord exists in sugar as Paramatma and empowers it to be sweet. So any element shows its dharma because of the presence of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise it is said to be dead. Like we say, oh, the battery is dead. So what do you mean battery is dead? Battery is anyway dead matter only. But still we say the battery is dead. So what does it mean to say that the battery is dead? It is not performing its dharma. So then we say that the battery is dead. Similarly, you say that, you know, look at the expiry date of something, medicines, as if they have some, according to their karma, they have some lifespan. It's all dead matter. What does it mean to have an expiry date for something? Expiry date means beyond which it will cease to perform its dharma. So any element, even though it may be inanimate, is said to possess some life in the form of its dharma. So that dharma is shown by that particular inanimate object also, because the Supreme Lord as super soul is present in them, allowing them to exhibit their dharma. So therefore, here he says that, my dear Lord, so I was mentioning this because he doesn't take shelter of a body, but he is the one who actually gives shelter to the body, because each one of the element is able to show its dharma because he exists in each one of that element as the super soul. So he says that covered by this body made of five elements, remaining as a spiritual particle, you Krishna, you are omniscient, you are superior to Prakriti and Purusha, and your powers are not weakened by the material elements. Again, another very important nature of the Supreme Lord is brought about by the Jiva within the womb of his mother, that the Supreme Lord's powers are not weakened, even though he may take, when the living entity is covered by a human body, like, you know, dhumena vriyate vaknir yatadarsho malenacha yatulbena avrita avrito garbas tata tenedam avritam, right? Something like that. So Krishna gives three analogies to explain how, you know, lust covers the living entity. So the material coverings or conditionings may cover the jiva to various degrees. And to that degree, the greater the degree of covering, to that degree the original potency of the living entity cannot be displayed. Even though the living entity is potent, But it that potency cannot be completely exhibited because of the material covering. That is the nature of living entity. Even though it is qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, even qualitatively it is not completely one with the Supreme Lord also. Just for some understanding purpose we may say, but qualitatively also it is not completely one with the Supreme Lord. There are some qualities which are there and the Supreme Lord is not there in the living entity. And quantitatively definitely, you know, it's not one with the Supreme Lord. So, the living entity, one of the qualities which the Supreme Lord has, but which is not there in the living entity, is that however heavily conditioned a particular body may be, the Supreme Lord as super soul, his potency is not at all weakened. Whereas the individual living entity, the heavier the conditioning, the lesser is his actual constitutional potency manifest. So therefore, here the Jiva is mentioning that Tena Mahimanam Avikuntaha. Your potency is never weakened even little bit despite the coverings made of Panchabhuta Rachite Sharire. That's the, and he says, therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O Supreme Lord, like that he is offering his prayers. So, here Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the entire process of devotional service is to purify oneself of this contamination of material nature and put oneself on the spiritual platform where he is qualitatively one with the personality of Godhead. So the living entity can be seen to be qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord only when he is completely purified. So that's what Prabhupada says. If the living entity's mahima must also fully shine forth, just like the Supreme Lord, then he has to remove all these contaminations of impressions and conditionings. In the Vedas, it is said that the living entity is always free. Asangohi ayam purushah. The living entity is liberated. His material contamination is temporary. And his actual position is that he is liberated. This liberation is achieved by Krishna consciousness, which begins from the point of surrender. So Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness begins from the point of surrender, like that. Therefore it is said here, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person. Vande Param Prakriti Purushayor Pumamsam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Lord who is superior to the Prakriti and superior to the Purushavataras also, and Avikunta Mahimanam, whose prowess is not at all weakened despite the coverings. However heavy the covering might be, his prowess is not weakened. Like that. This is the third prayer offered by the Jiva within the womb. Then he continues. Yanmaya yoru guna karma nibandhanesmin samsarike paticharam stadabhishramena nashtasmritir punarayam pravrinita lokam yuktyakaya mahadanugrahamantarena. So here the Lord may ask, you are just inside the womb, where did you get so much devotion from that you are establishing the nature of the supreme transcendental nature of mind while staying within the womb? Where did you get this kind of devotion while staying within the womb? So in this verse he says, I am a person punar nashta smritihi. A person repeatedly loses his memory. As we saw, mrityur sarvaharaschaham. The moment the actual death comes, complete memory of the previous lifespan. If someone is 36 years and 36 years, 0 days or 0 days old. If someone, so exactly 36 years and 1 day before, he has no memory of that day. At the most, he may remember the day he was born, which is also very doubtful. At least the first 2-3 years, probably no one remembers anything. But definitely not the day before he was born. Because that memory is completely wiped out by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So here, the living entities within the womb who is offering the prayers, he says, a person repeatedly loses his memory, tad abhishramena, because of fatigue. What kind of fatigue? Asmin samsarike pati charan, because of walking on this path of samsara, of repeated birth and death, birth and death, birth and death, he becomes terribly fatigued and he loses all his past memories. Yan mayaya uruguna karma yuktya, and he is bound by yad, whose mayaya, whose maya potency, uruguna karma yuktya. It is bound by the Lord's powerful karma produced from the gunas. Kaya pravrinita lokam, how can he choose the abode of the Lord, mahad anugraham antarena? So he's telling, this is the situation of a fallen soul like me. So can't you guess that definitely this has happened only because of the intervention of a great devotee? Otherwise, what is the chance that a person like me, who has repeatedly lost my memory so many times, samsarike paticharan tad abhishramena, because of being fatigued by continuously walking on this path of samsara, I have practically forgotten who I was in my previous life also. How can I remember your nature, and how can I desire to achieve your abode without a devotee having interfered in my life? As Prahlad Maharaj says, soham katam nu visurje tavabhritya sevam. What is that verse? Evam janam nipatitam prabhavahi kupe kamabhi kama manuya prapatan prasangat Kritvatmasat Sura Rishina Bhagavan Grihita Soham Katamna Visurje Tavabhritya Sevam. In the same mood, the living entity says, what is my situation? As Prahlad Maharaj says, Evam Janam Nipatitam Prabhavahi Kupe Kamabi Kamam Anuyaha Prapatan. So people of this world, being consumed by their desire to enjoy in this material world, are falling into this snake hole. And very much inspired by such personalities, I am also following them, and I also fell into the snake hole. But Sura Rishi, Devarshi Narad, Atmasat Kritva, he said that, oh, he is my property. Considering me as his property, he has pulled me out of this snake hole of material existence. Kritvatmasat Surarishina Bhagavan Grihitaha. He literally put his hand into the snake hole and pulled me out. Soham katamnu visrije tava brithya sevam. How can I give up serving my spiritual master Narada Muni, who has literally picked me up from this snake hole of demons? So same thing here, the living entity within the womb of his mother, he says, my dear Lord, you are asking me where from I received this devotion towards you, that I am offering such wonderful prayers. How is it possible for a fallen soul like me to have this knowledge if a devotee had not interfered in my life? Therefore, one should understand that without the interference of a devotee, no one can get devotional service. As in the second canto, worship of demigods is described in the third chapter of second canto, where, you know, Brahmaji, Shukadeva Goswami speaks about, you know, those who want a lot of sense gratification, he should worship Indra. Those who want a good wife, he should worship Uma, and so on. So later he says, Akamas sarva kamova moksha kama udaradihi tivrena bhakti yogena ejeta purusham param. That a very intelligent person, he would worship Krishna only. Even though if he may want to fulfill all his material desires, still he would worship the Supreme Lord Krishna only. So he is udaradihi. So then the question arises, oh, when would these demigod worshippers also become udaradi? At what stage of their demigod worship would they take up to worshipping Krishna? At what stage of their demigod worship would that worship transform into bhakti? Shukadeva Goswami says, never. He says, etavan eva yajatam iha nishreyasodayaha Bhagavati achalo bhavo yad bhagavata sangataha. He says that these etavan eva yajatam, all these other worshippers of demigods, they can get nishreya saudayaha. The real auspiciousness for them can arise in the form of bhakti. It can arise in them only bhagavata sangataha. When a devotee interferes in their lives, only in that way one can get bhakti. This is very systematically discussed in Madhurya Kadambini, in the beginning of Madhurya Kadambini. We'll just spend a few minutes, you know, this understanding how one gets bhakti. We have heard it many times. A little more systematized in the beginning section of first chapter of Madhurya Kadambini. So where this is described. He says that even though just like the Supreme Lord is independent, you cannot ascribe any material cause for the appearance of the Supreme Lord. Even though sometimes it is mentioned that, what is that? Atma Bhuvo, Kunti Maharani offers one of the early prayers which she mentions about Jato hi atma bhuvartitah, she says. Brahmaji offered his prayers. That's why you appeared. From one point of view, Brahmaji is a devotee. So his prayers are potent enough to bring the Lord, just like Advaita Acharya offered his prayers. But from another point of view, it seems like a material cause. Is that the real purpose of, even though sometimes it might seem like there is a material cause to the appearance of the Supreme Lord, but there is actually no material cause. Similarly, there might seem to be some material cause for appearance of bhakti also, but bhakti also appears by his own free will. So like for example, Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So even though he mentions this, that does not mean dharmasya glani forces him to appear. Dharmasya glani does not become the cause of Krishna's appearance. Krishna, out of his own free will, chooses to appear whenever there is dharmasya glani. So therefore, concomitant occurrence need not necessarily indicate causality. So whenever there is dharmasya glanir, the Supreme Lord appears. Therefore, dharmasya glani is the cause of the Lord's appearance. Okay, so the observation is right, but the conclusion is wrong. So concomitance need not necessarily mean causality. Even though Krishna himself says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati Bharata. And even though sometimes scriptures predict this time the Supreme Lord appears, you know, so it might seem like he has become subservient to time or the injunctions of the scriptures. That is also false, because injunctions of the scriptures were written by whom? Lord only. So injunctions of the scriptures indicates the Lord's free will only. So therefore, when the Lord appears according to the injunctions of the scriptures, the injunctions of scriptures do not become the cause of the Lord's appearance. So even though there might seem to be many material causes for the appearance of the Supreme Lord, but still the Lord, the only cause of the appearance of the Supreme Lord is his own free will. Everything else takes a back seat. The Lord adjusts everything. But the primary cause for the Lord's appearance, or the only cause for Lord's appearance, is his own free will. The same way, bhakti might also seem to have some material cause, but bhakti has no material causality. Only bhakti can give rise to bhakti. So then how does one gets bhakti? How does a person receive devotion? That's what is discussed in this first section of Madhurya Kadambini. So he quotes this verse. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. So he says that ahaituki, this appearance of bhakti is without any hetu. In English we may say causeless. But causeless is not a proper translation of ahaituki. Or cause is not a proper translation of hetu. So ahaituki means not causeless, but ahaituki means having no other cause other than itself. So you can say bhakti is self-causative, if there is a word like that that exists in the English language. So a more appropriate translation would be of ahaituki would be self-causative. No other cause other than itself. That's the meaning of ahaituki. Otherwise, if you say, oh, you get bhakti through the mercy of a devotee, then in the strictest sense, can you call that bhakti causeless? No. But you can call it self-causing or self-causative, because it is the bhakti within the heart of the devotee that causes bhakti in the other person's heart. So therefore, it is bhakti which has caused bhakti. Therefore, it is self-causative. It is not strictly causeless in that sense. Oh, that is different. If you take ahaituki in that sense, that is more like anyabhilashita shunyam. We are not talking in that sense. That bhakti has to be anyabhilashita shunyam. But how one receives that bhakti, that's what is indicated here with the word ahaituki. The word ahaituki, causeless in this statement, indicates that devotional service makes its appearance without any material cause. There is no material cause for bhakti. So, therefore, whenever the appearance of bhakti is indicated in Bhagavatam, if you see, especially in the 11th canto and other places, the word yadrichaya comes. Yadrichaya matkatadav jata shaddostu sevane, and so on. So, or yadrichaya eva upachita, or mat bhaktim yadrichaya. So wherever the appearance of bhakti is indicated, the word yadrichaya comes. So now, the immediate simple meaning of yadrichaya would mean by chance or by luck. As in yadricha lava santushto dandvatito vimatsaraha. So as in that case, yadrichaya, the most easiest understanding of yadrichaya would mean by chance or by luck. Whatever comes of its own accord, he accepts. Yadricha lava santushto. So one may say, oh, yadricha means by chance. Then one may say, by chance or luck. Then one may say, oh, what is the cause of that luck? Why someone is lucky, someone is not lucky? So one may say, oh, maybe the cause of that luck is his piety. This person was more pious, this person was impious, so he received bhakti, he did not receive. Then he say, oh, then piety becomes the cause of bhakti. So therefore, it cannot be right because bhakti is ahaituki. Okay. So then the next question is, luck means what? Can there be any cause for luck? Luck means luck. You know, you cannot probe and try to find out, you know, what is the cause of that luck. Some unexplained thing. So then it is very, such a thing is a very inconclusive statement. Then you can say that, you know, it's absolutely random. You can never ascertain who can get bhakti. So if you say that it is absolutely random, then there is no meaning to preaching. No, everyone should stop preaching. Because it's absolutely random who gets bhakti, who does not get bhakti. So therefore, that cannot be a possible reason. So then one says that, okay, the reason why someone gets bhakti, someone does not get bhakti, is Lord's mercy. Now the question is, why is Lord merciful towards someone and not merciful towards someone else? So this brings us to the same, you know, argument. You know, if you say piety, then is piety the cause of this thing? So that is also inconclusive. Then one may say, it's Lord's causeless mercy. Then one may say, then the Lord is showing favoritism. He is showing his causeless mercy towards one living entity, but another living entity is not receiving his causeless mercy. So the Lord is partial then. So Lord's causeless mercy also cannot be the cause of bhakti, because the Lord cannot be partial. Even though Krishna says, Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyaham. He says, I am equal to everyone, but if someone becomes a devotee, I become favorably disposed. So the Lord being partial to a devotee is, everyone knows. But here we are not talking about partiality towards a devotee. Here, person A, person B, both of them are non-devotees only. But one receives bhakti, another does not receive bhakti. Okay? So, if you say that, oh, this person is a devotee and this person is a non-devotee, and if the Lord is partial, then it's okay. But if both of them are non-devotees, how can the Lord be partial towards one and not towards the other? So, therefore, he says, the Lord's causeless mercy is also not a cause. Can't it be desire, curiosity on whose part? Let's come to that. We will analyze that point also. So, it is not luck, it is not piety, it is not Lord's causeless mercy. Then the only option left is the devotee. Then the question arises that then who is the cause? So he says that then it must be the mercy of the devotee that is the cause. Then he says, you are coming back to the same old argument. Is the devotee partial then? Why is he bestowing mercy to one and not bestowing mercy to another? Oh, he says, oh, that is simple. That is easy to explain. The Lord is omniscient and omnipotent. But a devotee is not omnipotent. So he cannot unlimitedly distribute to everyone. So he has to see. So a devotee in Pune can preach to devotees in Pune only. But the Supreme Lord staying in Golok can preach to many people. But a devotee in Pune, he has limitations. Even though he is Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravartan, he is endowed with Krishna Shakti. But nevertheless, there is definitely a limitation when it comes to reaching out to people. One cannot unlimitedly reach out. He's also thick wall. Yeah. Who? Paramatma. Yeah, but Paramatma's preaching is different. It's a very neutral preaching. But here we are talking about speaking the message of Bhagavan. So he says, so the devotee has to make discrimination. Ishware tadadineshu balisheshu dvishashtucha prema maitri kripa upeksha. So he has to see, because he has limited time. He has to maximize, make the best use of the bad bargain. So he has to see, who is that person who will receive the message? Whom I can reach to? What is, what kind of people am I good at, reaching out to? Like, for example, if I am in an interior remote village part of Maharashtra, if there are two people, so one is a Marathi speaking devotee, another is someone like me from South India who can't even speak Hindi properly. So if two of us are there, then definitely, the person who can speak Marathi can definitely reach out better in one sense. So therefore, such considerations have to be taken into account when a devotee is preaching. So a devotee is definitely not omnipotent, even though purity is the force. We are not doubting that. But having said that, based on the devotee's own, you can't say conditioning, but the kind of limitations and skill sets that he possesses, he may be very appropriately skilled to reach out to a particular class of people. Someone may be very good at reaching out to preaching to the scientific community. Someone may be very good at reaching out to the student community. So that way. So therefore, a devotee, especially a Madhyama Adhikari, has to make distinctions as to who can receive this message of mine the way I am presenting it. Who are my potential audience? Who is my potential audience? Not that a devotee feels that, oh, because he is not literate, he cannot take up to bhakti. A devotee does not think like that. But then he definitely thinks, this is the way I can present bhakti. So who are my potential audience? In whom I can create an impact? That a devotee has to see. So therefore, so much planning happens. It's not like just work on your purity and you don't need to make any JOSD slides and reach out to people. It's not like that. Purity is there. At the same time, we strategize, plan. The yearly planning happens. What is the vacation time? What time? All those plannings are there because you want to reach out. Time is limited. You want to maximize your reach out to the people. Because we have limited time, limited lifespan, and potency is also limited. So therefore, a devotee has to make discrimination as to whom I can reach out to, whom I cannot reach out to. So therefore, you cannot say that a devotee is partial in this case. A devotee is not partial. Or rather, he has to act partially because of his own limitations. So therefore, the cause is a devotee. So the cause of bhakti is devotee. But still that does not explain how is bhakti ahaituki. Still there seems to be a hetu here. But he says, no, a devotee can reach out and create an impact and give bhakti only because he has bhakti within his heart. So it is the bhakti within his heart that is transforming the heart of the other person. So therefore it is bhakti giving rise to bhakti. Therefore in that sense bhakti is ahaituki. Like that it is the self-manifesting nature of bhakti is described. So I'll first answer his question and then we'll come to that point. So you asked that the receptivity of the So is it the receptivity of the speaker that could be a cause? Quite possible. From a very superficial point of view, it might seem like that. Like this morning only we were discussing that let's say someone says, announces that, oh, all of you get ready today, a very wealthy man is going to distribute wealth. And everyone is running towards the house of that wealthy man. Some have some begging bowls, some have nothing, they are just running with their hands, you know. And one very intelligent person picks up a bed sheet and he runs there. And from the top of the building, you know, this rich man has a gunny bag filled with gold coins and he is throwing it out. And this person thinks, see how intelligent. He spreads out his bed sheet. And you know, a lot of gold coins fall in that. He, you know, he takes it and goes. So you may say, here in this case, oh, the receptivity of the receiver. He received more because he opened his bed sheet. Okay, that seems like a fair enough cause. But if bed sheet is the cause, then you open your bed sheet now.
Reaching and crying out to him, and then he is giving specifically.
Oh, in that case, why would we go and ask a person, please give me bhakti, if we already did not have it?
Because we are already entangled in material and we are disgusted, and then we are saying, now I understand, I have read your Gita long back.
I have read your Gita.
Long back, yeah.
Okay. So that reading the Gita becomes the cause, na?
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, the moment you say, I cried out, which means you already have Shraddha in Bhakti, which you have, then you have to, you know, scratch your head and find out where you received it from.
But until you cry very sincerely, so many times, so many people cry. Shiva does not give.
Okay, so in that case, what is, okay, yes, Lord Shiva is a devotee, but, yeah, so therefore, so when you approach him to show you, to guide you to the right direction, then he guides you, but still, that does not necessarily mean, that is more like you can say, that way you may get moksha, but you may not get bhakti. As Krishna, as it is mentioned, muktim dadati karhichit smana bhakti yogam. So you may get mukti, but you may not get, so here we are talking about pure devotional service. So you may get mukti, but you may not get shuddha bhakti. So in that sense, the receptivity of the receiver may seem quite like a superficial reason, but it's not the real reason. So, you know, everyone received the gold coins purely because there was a magnanimous soul sitting up and throwing all those gold coins. Okay, so today you incidentally happen to have a bed sheet, you got benefited. Someone else who had a small bowl, he didn't get benefited. The next day he chooses to distribute some charanamrit. So you have a bed sheet, what would you do with it? So the one with the begging bowl, he will get benefited. So therefore, such incidental reasons cannot be, you know, mentioned as, you know, therefore the receptivity, he had a better receptive bowl, therefore, you know, that cannot be the cause of one getting bhakti in that sense.
Initially, we didn't know about bhakti, but after reading Bhagavad Gita, like when we got, when we came in association with Srila Prabhupada through his purports, then is it like that, the bhakti was injected into our consciousness?
Yeah. So, this is, so through Prabhupada's association, we are getting bhakti. So, it's still the same thing. So the devotee's association can come in the form of a person or it can come in the form of his purports. So either way it is devotee's association only. So it does not, it's still, so you can pass the mic to, yeah, Prabhuji.
The earlier you told that Lord cannot be the cause, but now in the heart of devotees, how the bhakti is arising? He is doing bhakti of the Lord. Then Lord is only allowing bhakti to appear in the heart of the devotees. Like you told, na, ki mai te te sasu chapyaham. Those who become friend of Krishna or those who surrender to Krishna, Krishna becomes friend. So for devotee,
but that is after.
No, devotee is ready to give bhakti, madhyamadhikari. But he is getting bhakti by the will of the Lord, if Lord is pleased, then. So, he is getting through the Lord and then it's coming through the other people.
Oh, that is true. So, when we say we receive it, the devotee's bhakti is the cause, that does not mean that the devotee is independent of the will of Krishna. But Krishna has said, here, I am the wholesale dealer. And you are my retail distributor. You may choose to distribute it to anyone. But what he is distributing is mercy of Krishna only. But then whom to distribute, that Krishna has willingly surrendered that that he has given that option to the devotee. He has left it to the devotee. Whomever you may choose, you may distribute. But ultimately, it's Krishna only who empowered the devotee to distribute that bhakti also.
Then Krishna becomes the cause in one sense.
Correct. Krishna becomes the cause of bhakti, but in a particular person, why in one particular person, why not in other? That Krishna does not become the direct cause. Like for example, he has created a system of law of karma. If Krishna was not there, the system would not have been created. But is he directly the cause of your being implicated in your karma? No. The same way, in one sense Krishna is the cause, in the other sense the Krishna is not the cause. So why a particular person receives, particular person does not receive, Krishna is not the cause. In that sense I am mentioning. Ultimately, it's Krishna's mercy only that's empowering someone to take up to bhakti. But it's coming through the devotee.
And
So, why would someone freely will to take Krishna?
Because he has free will.
Correct. But what is, why is he, see, there must be some cause for choosing something, right?
Because he is eternally positioned to be a devotee of Krishna. He is eternally positioned and he has put on the mask temporarily.
Oh, yeah. Okay. With that temporary mask, why someone with temporary mask is choosing, another one is not choosing?
This person is frustrated.
Okay. So mere frustration would not necessarily push one to towards Krishna.
No, and then he goes to, he has heard, okay, and he goes there and then he says, oh, I want that again, lead me to the right
path, and then he leads you suddenly, all of a sudden. Okay. Again, that, you know, it must.
Same question I was ever
wondering. One must trace out to some more reason behind it. Actually, it's not like you know, that inspiration can come, but it generally happens over a long time of accumulation of sukritis. Good question, but the point is, why would you get the inspiration to freely will in that direction? That is true. But now we are covered. So now we are speaking as... So we always have a constitutional duty. That's right. But in a conditioned state, that is covered. So why would a particular... So you mean to say a particular type of conditioning is more favorable to surrender to Krishna?
No, I'm saying that
see, it's, you are oversimplifying the whole thing. The fact that your bhakti is a reasonable choice for you is because you see someone practicing it happily and you see someone presenting it to you in a palatable way, and that's why it's a viable option for you. Okay? Otherwise, if it was presented in a horrible way, unpalatable way, very unattractive way, it would not be a viable option for you. So, you are freely willing bhakti because it is presented in a way which is appealing to your free will. Yeah. And someone has to give you a rope and make you feel that if you come out, it's good for you. Yeah. One last point we'll take and then we'll move ahead.
Was it like the cause of bhakti in a particular person is certainly bhakti in the heart of a devotee?
Yeah.
But we have to also see it from the other perspective, that devotee may want to give it to, say, 10 people, but then only few may actually receive it. So I am like, if I am a gardener, so I am sowing the seeds in, say, 10 places. But then the fertility of the soil also matters, not just my sowing the seed.
Good point. So the fertility of the seed also matters, of the soil also matters, correct. So if here we are talking about the soil accepting the seed only. So, it is mentioned that if it's not that by mere one contact one gets bhakti, that's a very superficial understanding. As they say, the last straw that broke the camel's back, you've heard, you know. So, someone kept on loading the back of a camel with lot of weight. The camel, let's say it has a capacity of carrying 500 kilograms weight. It was loaded with 499 kilograms. Finally, someone took and put a 1 kilogram worth weight on top of that camel. The camel's back broke. And is that 1 kilogram load the cause of breaking the camel's back? No. So, you might put that same 1 kilogram load on someone else's back and it may not break. So, but it is certainly contributing to coming closer to the threshold, right? So, someone may be carrying 400 kilograms weight, someone may be carrying 300 kilograms weight, someone may be carrying 499 kilograms weight. So, when you throw in your 1 kilogram worth of whatever weight it is, his back breaks, and we may assume that, oh, you know, he is more fertile, but that's not necessary that way. So Rupa Goswami says that it generally takes many, many lifetimes of Sukriti to actually fructify in the form of Shraddha. So it's generally not, unless the person who is giving that Sukriti is highly powerful, highly potent, it very rarely does it happen that in a single meeting only one becomes a devotee. So generally we may meet someone, preach to them. If they very soon take up to bhakti, then we should understand that in his previous lifetimes he has had sufficient contact with devotees and has received lot of Sukriti, and all he needed was just little more Sukriti, which I facilitated. So, and now he has taken up to bhakti. Many times it happens that many people who may just come, eat prasad and go, eat prasad and go, eat prasad and go, and then we may say, now enough. You know, only the serious devotees, you know, we will train them. That's good. But then don't underestimate that, you know, the 3-4 times he has taken prasadam, that has definitely added. It may fructify elsewhere. In a different lifetime also. Like, there are many cases when we speak about only the 100 odd devotees who got transformed by Prabhupada, but there are thousands of others who came, heard from Prabhupada, ate the prasadam and left, about whom we never speak about, we never hear about. And many of them later, some of them Indians, who had met Prabhupada in the 70s, heard from him, spoke with him, but never took up to Krishna consciousness. But later in their 1980s and 1990s, they took initiation. Some of them took initiation from Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj. Some of them took initiation from Tamal Krishna Swami Maharaj. So as a, you know, there are many such stories where they came to Prabhupada with little less Sukriti, and it took them another 2 decades to accumulate the further Sukriti that was needed for them to take up to bhakti. So therefore, you know, it's just a, I would say it's more than calling it fertility of soil, I would say it's just one is compatibility, like you know, what you are presenting, that packaging is, whether it is appealing to that person or not. So we generally have a one kind of packaging which would appeal to maximum crowd of people. Generally, you know, to student class of people, this kind of packaging generally appeals. So it's a general proposition, but it's not necessary that everyone might feel that packaging very appealing also. Many of them may not find it very appealing, but they may find some other packaging more appealing. So in one sense, if someone takes up, someone does not take up, it is one thing is packaging. Maybe you have packaged it in a way that is more appealing to a particular class of people and not appealing to some other class. So we cannot conclude that one who accepted it is fertile and one who did not accept it is not fertile. That's not probably a very sound conclusion.
So we should also work on the fertility in that sense. I mean, the helping the people to become more receptible.
Oh, helping means you just offer bhakti in a way that is more appealing to their condition.
Yeah, that's what.
In the initial. Yeah,
so at the end, basically how I had concluded it earlier was that It is the mercy of the devotee, but the mercy of the devotee should, like the intelligence of the devotee in giving mercy is to actually make the person feel good with the present, the bhakti which he is actually giving. The packaging, as you are saying, or the presentation,
what he is
making of the bhakti content should become appealable to the person.
Correct.
That will, either this lifetime or some lifetime, it will begin as bhakti.
Correct, correct. Yeah, that's right.
So, the basically, how to say, the intelligence of the devotee is in making it in such a form which is appealing to the person.
Yeah. Intelligence, and I would say more than intelligence, genuine concern.
The same thing. Mm-hmm. Intelligence of, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if some, genuine concern becomes the intelligence in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if because every devotee, he has his own way of presentation. So if now you say that, you know, I'll put you in a Marathi village, you have to give a class in Marathi, then, you know, I can't do it. So if there are a group of people, some of them are English speaking, some of them are not English speaking, then I may have to present a class in English, and those who are English speaking, they may accept. So in that sense, because a devotee is limited by his own capability in one sense. So, he is not capable of universally packaging the message in an appealing way to everyone. That's not possible. Some devotees are, if suddenly, you know, four youth preachers are chosen and said, go and do Western preaching, it may take some time to develop the appropriate skill sets needed to make it appealing to the Western audience. So it's different. A different class of people, you know, at some point of time, you know, there was this Nam Rock. So many people got attracted through Nam Rock. Yeah, in one sense, marketing, but without the negative connotation attached to it, like that.
When I said the presentation should be appealing, as you said yesterday, the seed which the person will carry, that only will fructify further.
Yeah.
So the seed of pure devotion actually has to be made appealing. Because sometimes in such a thing, like the mantra rock, etc., the what type of seed actually we have given to the person, we have to also see.
It depends on the person who is offering it. Yeah,
correct. That's what so
just because someone is singing mantra and rock music does not necessarily mean he has a contaminated seed.
No
someone presenting it in a very sattvic way also does not necessarily mean he is carrying a very pure seed. So of course, one who is very proficient in singing rock music might probably indicate a quite contaminated swabhava. You know, background from which, because that's how he is getting attracted to. But that does not necessarily, he might still have a pure seed.
So the whole thing depends on the purity of the person who is actually presenting. If he has the
purity of
the person who is presenting plus the presentation.
Person means his purity devotee. Of Shraddha.
Yeah, that's what. Purity of the person means the Shraddha.
Yeah. And of course the Swabhava also. The more the Swabhava also gets purified. When Prabhupada says purity is the force, what purity is he talking about?
Shraddha purity.
Swabhava. Because he is appealing to pure devotees only. So when Prabhupada says purity is the force, he's speaking to whom? He's not speaking to karma yogis or jnana yogis or ashtanga yogis. He's speaking to practitioners of pure devotional service only. So when he says purity is the force, it refers to purity of swabhava. The more your unfavorable impressions are wiped out and more your heart is filled with devotional impressions, you will have a better impact. So So therefore, when Prabhupada says purity is the force, that purity refers to Swabhava and not Shraddha. Because Shraddha is understood. That he has already given. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dena vrtam anukulena krishna amsila. It's very clear. Someone with a mixed seed would not accept this proposal at all. Would say anyabhilashita shunyam? No. You know, that would not appeal to him at all. So when Prabhupada says purity is the force, he's talking about purity of Swabhava. Of course, once the more one's Swabhava becomes purified, the more one's heart becomes purified of the unfavorable impressions, the more impactful he can be in reaching out to people. That's also there.
Also, can you explain...
One last point and then we'll end here because it's already 6:30.
Can you explain about that? What does it mean then to preaching to faithless is an offense? Because then if like here the Shraddha is already so, not there.
Yeah. Krishna says that Bhagavad Gita has to be, you know, who is this knowledge meant to?
To
non-envious and Shraddhavan. Yeah. And those who are devotees, it's meant to be preached to the devotees, basically. So, he doesn't say, it's not that we should not be preaching to non-devotees. We cannot give the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to non-devotees immediately. We can give them faith. So that is preaching. So we should preach. Because Prabhupada definitely said, preaching is the essence. Right? So preaching is the essence. So we should preach. But preaching need not necessarily always mean to give knowledge. Because if you give knowledge to faithless, it's an offense to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. But you can make him more favorable to accept the knowledge. That is allowed. You can create the patrata. So we cannot give knowledge, but we can definitely give Shraddha. So when he receives that Shraddha, then you can give him knowledge. So therefore, preaching we have to do, but we have to understand what constitutes preaching. Is it just giving the knowledge? Or is it making one favorable to receive the knowledge? It depends. If one already has received the Shraddha, then you give him knowledge. But if one has not received it, you make him favorable to receive it. That's also preaching.
Here is where the presentation part lies. The genuine concern and intelligence of the devotee to make it in such a way that actually the person will accept.
Yeah,
that's correct. Why I was clarifying this.
Yeah, yeah, correct. Correct. Yeah, yeah. Right. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki.